T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
This is Let's Talk Portland, Intercom Radio Portland's weekly public affairs program. I'm Gary Bloxham. The seniors in our community face a lot of challenges in normal times. But those challenges, like food insecurity and isolation, worsen during our current COVID-19 times. Meals on Wheels People is an organization whose main goal is to help our seniors. And on the show this time, I would like to welcome Suzanne Washington. Suzanne is the CEO of Meals on Wheels People. Hey, Suzanne.
Hi, Gary. How are you today?
Well, I'm doing good. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
How are things in your world during the pandemic?
Well, the pandemic kind of threw everything upside down and made us scramble around and do a lot of things differently, actually. So it's all going fairly well at this point, but it's really been a huge change in a very quick amount of time.
Yeah. You and your family and friends are all doing okay, though?
Oh, yeah. Everybody's good. Family, friends, daughter, all good.
Excellent. Well, let's talk about Meals on Wheels People. Tell me about Meals on Wheels People. I think I want to know the history first.
Well, so we started back in 1970, and it was started by several women who thought that they should help feed some of the people in their neighborhoods that were kind of on the edge and didn't have enough food. It evolved from there into delivering meals out of a church and kind of growing. And then in 1970, and that was in the 69 or so, and then in 1970, the Older Americans Act was established by the federal government to give specific funding for older Americans. So that's where the Meals on Wheels programs really around the country and the world started, was back in 1970s, early 70s.
Okay. I often hear Meals on Wheels. I don't often hear Meals on Wheels people. Why do you add people at the end of Meals on Wheels?
Well, it is because there's Meals on Wheels all around the country, but not all are nonprofits. So we're our own nonprofit, where we have to raise about 65% of the money we need every year to feed all the numbers that we do feed. Many Wheels on Wheels, nutrition providers, let's say, okay, they are funded maybe within a county. So a county service is providing nutrition, whether it's Meals on Wheels or in a congregate setting, but they're doing it themselves. Well, we're our own nonprofit, and that's why the people.
Awesome.
We started off as Loaves and Fishes Centers, and that was changed nearly 10 years ago to Meals on Wheels People, so that people would recognize Meals on Wheels, but we're all our own entity.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Thanks for sharing that story. I've always been curious. How long have you been with Meals on Wheels People, Suzanne?
Almost 6 years now.
Wow. So you've seen lots of changes in the last few years, haven't you?
Yes, definitely. I think when I came here, we had a lot more dining centers, and it's just really different, actually, yeah, how many people we serve that are homebound and the new information about seniors in isolation and how hard that is on their health. So a lot has changed.
How many people do you serve, and how does the program work?
So we often count it in meals. We serve about 14,000 to 15,000 people a year, but we often talk about it in meals. So we'll make and get out about 1.2 million meals each year. So what we do is both deliver to people that are seniors, older folks, 60 and older. We deliver to their homes. For whatever reason, they may not be able to cook, they can't afford food, they can't get out to get groceries. Whatever the reason, we want to make sure they have the the amount of food they need and the nutrition they need. And then we also do that in dining centers because we recognize how challenging isolation is for seniors. It is one of the worst things for their health. So we have dining centers around the counties we're in. We serve Washington County, Multnomah County, and across the river in Clark County. And we have dining centers in each of those counties, hopefully to get older people out of their homes where they can talk with others, meet with others, have that human connection they need that is so important to them for them to be able to thrive into their older years.
Is that unique to Meals on Wheels, people? That sounds like a really super amazing thing.
I think it's interesting because every Meals on Wheels is a little different, where some only do a congregate dining center, right? Not everybody does home delivery, or people do home delivery and not the dining centers. Some people have more services for those isolated in their homes, some have less. So that's one of the funny things about it. We're all rooted in providing good nutrition for seniors in the way of food. How we do it and in what ways we do it is often different.
Are you talking about maybe one meal per day? Is that kind of how it works?
We will do, the average is one meal per day, and sometimes people need more than that, and we'll do more than that. But the funding really is built on one really nutritious meal a day. And then depending on who's doing it, like us, so we're our own nonprofit, we raise more money, so we may deliver an extra meal or meals on the weekends that others may not do.
Okay. How have things changed during the pandemic? Because, gosh, we're all doing our social distancing, and it's got to be very different for you guys.
Well, and it's really different because the population we serve are one of the most vulnerable people to the pandemic, right? So we immediately closed all of our dining centers. We did not want to have older folks coming in and being exposed to the virus. And of course, you've seen how many people that are older are the ones dying from the pandemic primarily, and those with medical conditions. And we serve both that category. So we had to close our dining centers and turn everybody into a home delivered meal was the first thing. Anybody that was coming into a dining center, they were no longer able to. So how many of them needed that home delivery? And it was a good majority of that. So we then started delivering to everybody in their homes. Then I think a week later, we had to say, okay, wait a minute, we have to limit the exposure at the door. So no longer were we able to deliver to everybody four or five times a week, which was our normal how we did things. We want somebody to see them every day, chat with them. We have this core, we use about 450 volunteers to get the meals out the door and to the people, and they would get to chat with them and check on them, and we had to really limit that and cut it back to a delivery only once a week, except for a very small people that had to have it more often. Those are the two biggest changes. And then I think the third change was that we just needed to get more food in their hands as the economy tanked and food costs are rising and all the various things. That one meal really wasn't enough, so we're providing multiple meals and then this whole kind of supplemental food that to make sure they have enough throughout every day to eat, not just the one meal.
And is it kind of just delivered to the front porch, basically?
Yeah, we do a no-contact delivery. So we arrive and we knock on the door, ring the doorbell, hang it on the door, put it on table on the porch, whatever for that client, and then back up at least for that 6-10 feet. And are masked and gloved and all that to make sure that we don't. I think the biggest risk is there's two risks. We serve to people who are older and have medical conditions, and we have volunteers that are older. We have volunteers. In fact, we had a gal who was 104 and still delivering meals not long ago.
Wow.
So we want to make sure neither the participant or the volunteer are exposed to the virus, and so we do a no-contact delivery that way.
Yeah, that sounds very smart and just good protocol.
Yeah, I think it's been hard because what's one of the participants, they love being able to chat with people at the door, right? And they would hug each other, and there's so many volunteers who've been delivering for 15, 20 years. They know each other. They get on a route, and they serve the same people. They bond pretty quickly. So I think the hardest thing has been, I don't get to talk to my usual deliverer every day. Or, you know, you may have five different people you get to talk to in a week, and now you get to talk to one person. So that's the biggest challenge.
Yeah, really get to count on that that camaraderie that comes around, and now it's just a little bit different.
Yeah, that was one of the first things that were really hard. Just, wait a minute, I don't get to see somebody at my door every day.
Let's talk a little bit more about social isolation and its effect on seniors, because it's a big deal.
It is one of the fastest growing issues, and in fact, I've heard it will become the number one issue for older adults as far as a public health issue. So it's been equated to smoking 15 cigarettes a day, being isolated in your own home as an older person. So it affects both physical health, emotional health, every possible part of the human being, right? So we are, for us, part of our strategic plan is not only are we going to provide nutritious food, but we are going to provide that human connection. So especially now with the pandemic, because we can't be at their door every day, we've really ramped up. We do wellness check calls every day. We have started a friendly chatting program where we have, I think it's over 700 volunteers calling clients, our participants, to just chat, check in on them, see how they're doing, and just make that human connection. So for us, it's really important. And I think all of the Meals on Wheels around the country are really working on, okay, how do we make sure that we do more? We have people at the door every day delivering food, but what else can we do? So that's what we're really working on over the next year.
Do you have some pretty tech-savvy seniors who are doing like FaceTime and video chatting, all that kind of stuff too?
We have some. We actually are working on doing more of it. We did a pilot project, and I have to say, those who did not have technology like a smartphone or an iPad, something like that, those who we were able to get connected and have it, they took off. They're using Facebook and calling friends and family every day and chatting with the video. So they're willing. It's just more how do we get enough hardware in their hands and that internet access and then the ongoing support. That's what we found. They loved calling our staff person who worked on the program. They would call to say, I forgot how to turn my email on, or I can't get it to come up, or something, all the technical issues. And really it ended up being they were calling to chat as much as to get support. So they're out there. They want to do it. We just got to get them connected.
I'm glad your volunteers are still able to make phone calls and check in on everybody. That's got to be really important.
Oh, it is. I think we've made, I have one gal who calls, and she calls somebody every day. And she is a little bit older and had some health issues came up, and she's not able to leave the house either. So I think it's been a win-win for some of our volunteers that get to call and have that connection for themselves. And it works for both our participants and the volunteers. They both get that connection needed.
Yeah. Well, during normal times, how does that work? Like somebody brings a meal to the house and they get to hang out and visit for a while too?
Yeah, it really is dependent on the volunteer. Every volunteer is a little different, and the participant. Some participants don't want to chat. They open the door, you give them a meal, you say, hello, how you doing? They're like, fine, great, and that's it, right? Other people, they stand around, they have a conversation, they might be invited in, they sit down and chat for a while. So it really just depends. And the longer that relationship goes, the longer their volunteer delivers, the more they get to know each other. And then, of course, it always evolves from there.
Yeah, you said that there's been some volunteers have been delivering to the same people for several years.
Oh, I have a couple board members who's been delivering for more than 20 years.
Wow.
There's people that have been doing it since they were kids, and they started as kids, and then when they got, into adulthood and were able to, they started volunteering again. So it's a generational kind of thing, which is wonderful, because the older folks love to see kids at the door.
I bet. Yeah, yeah. If somebody listening wants to volunteer, how do they go about doing that?
They can just go to our website and click on the volunteer tab. Our website is MOWP.org, so it's Meals on Wheels people, but just capitaled MOWP.org, and they'll get to the site and they can volunteer or donate or make and decide to do friendly chatting or whatever it is that we've got going on.
Yeah, if you're just sitting at home by yourself, why not volunteer and make somebody else happy too? Because we're all kind of stuck inside.
Right. So if you can't leave and you got some time, friendly chatting is great. If you're not the kind of person who likes to talk on the phone or just chat, we still need drivers to deliver food. We have people packing food boxes and all sorts of things. So there's still opportunities to volunteer. We had a huge rush at the start of the pandemic, and so we don't need as many drivers as we normally do, but there's still opportunities there to get involved for sure.
How are you coordinating volunteers at this time? Like, they have to be socially distanced too, and that's got to be a task.
Yeah, I think that's one of the challenges is, again, especially as it goes on longer and people start to get wary of it and you think, oh, it's better now, so I don't have to be as vigilant. But we ask people to wear masks and we stage tables. So if we're packing at a certain site, people are packing at it from afar. They're 10 feet apart in a table at least and that kind of thing. So we really try to have the footprints on the ground and remind people this is 6 feet apart. And all of that. And we're still definitely doing no contact delivery. So it's just kind of constantly reminding people and making sure that we're following the protocol as best we can.
Yeah, we never imagined this would become part of normal life, did we?
No, that's for sure not.
To say the very least.
Someday it may go back to somewhat of normal. I think it's going to change everything. And we'll see how long it takes back to just takes to get back to some sort of normalcy.
Yeah,
but
everybody always says normal in quotes. Normal, whatever
exactly.
Normal is and was.
Yeah, and who knows what that will be 10 years from now or even a year from now. So
right.
I think for us the challenge is how do we make sure during this time with older adults that the longer it goes, the more isolated they are. So how can we make sure we're still, you know, connecting with them, making sure they're okay, getting them enough food, and eventually be able to hopefully get them out of their homes and into a setting where they can, have more interaction and just that connection to people and engaged where they're not stuck in their homes. But I imagine they're going to be in their homes a lot longer than other people.
Yeah. And probably engaging with them so that they maybe aren't glued to the television all day watching the news, because that could really bring you down. You know, if you're isolated anyway and then you're watching the news, it really, that's just kind of a downward spiral.
Yeah, that's why we're hoping our wellness check calls and our friendly chatting can at least, you know, interrupt that a little bit, because I do know so many older people that they get into the news and that's what they're tuned into, and it just creates more anxiety and stress.
Yeah, for sure. So I want to talk about the restaurant you have in Vancouver called The Diner. The Diner Vancouver, right?
Yes, that's it.
Tell me about that.
Well, we started The Diner Vancouver about a year ago, and we were just kind of getting it up to speed and really taken off when COVID hit. So now we're down to takeout. But the idea was to create a neighborhood restaurant where the general community comes in, they have great food, good environment, and they pay for their food just like any restaurant, and open that up, though, to participants in our program. So they also could come in, eat in that environment, kind of be in an intergenerational setting with the neighborhood, and have more choice about what time of day to eat, what to eat, and who to eat with. So it really is an experiment in saying, let's give older folks who can get out of their home more choice than what we can do in more of the institutional dining centers. Because we're in Parks and Rec and senior centers, those kind of buildings. Mm-hmm. They tend to be a little institutional. So this is giving them just more choice on a menu to be served at a table. And it was really cool because our servers and cooks and people are getting to know the regulars. We already had regulars coming in, sitting at the counter or at the same spot in the booth every day. So the hope is that we'll be able to get back to offering that once we get through this pandemic a little bit more. And the participants are getting to engage with the neighborhood and the, you know, general public. And at the same time, they're not paying full cost of that meal. They're donating towards a meal. And we're creating sustainability for the organization so that we heavily subsidize all of our sites and, like I said, have to fundraise for everything. So if we can have the paying customers offset the cost of the donating customers a little bit and even break even, we're doing better with our fundraised dollars.
Wow, that sounds like a really unique and cool experience. You can just go hang out. Is it restricted to seniors, or can anybody go, or how does that work during normal times,
it's
of course?
Regular restaurant all the times it's open. We want everybody to come in. We want families and, you know, teenagers and business people, everybody to come in. It's better for our older population. They get to interact. They've told us, hey, we don't want to just always sit with another 85-year-old. We want other people around that we can engage with, talk to, just be in the environment. So it's open to everybody. And I would encourage everybody to go. Right now it's called the Diner Vancouver, and it's on Mill Plains in Vancouver, Southeast Mill Plain. And we're doing takeout right now until we can open in that first phase or whenever Clark County opens to restaurant dining.
Okay. So you can still get delicious food from there. That's good.
Yeah. It's call in and pick it up. And we've had people, it's funny because we've had people bring in their lounge chairs or their deck chairs and getting their takeout and going out in the parking lot and setting up their chairs about 6 feet apart and, you know, dining together that way. So it's a community place, and that's what we want to keep growing when we're able to get back and really open it up. We want it to be that community for older people and families and everybody in the neighborhood. So hopefully we'll be able to get back to normal and see if it works.
Yeah. So it kind of sounds like people are tailgating out in the parking lot. That sounds fun.
Yeah, that's totally what they've been doing. Exactly. So we're hoping to get some real tables out there and be able to, when we get to reopen, do some of that dining where people can be outside, especially since it's summer, and be able to social distance that way and help, you know, make everybody safe.
Yeah. Once you do get to reopen the Diner Vancouver, what modifications are you going to be making?
We are working all the procedures now where we're putting plexiglass between the, there's a place where you enter that ends up right at our counter. So we're putting that up there, making sure we're not going to allow people to sit at the countertop because it's too close to all the servers and what they're doing. We'll take out tables so there's fewer tables in the space and do every other booth. I mean, it's a wonderful space. Like, it's an old-fashioned diner with a modern twist is what we say. It feels really good. It's clean, really good food, locally sourced as much as possible. We want to keep that feel, so which will be a challenge, but basically just a lot fewer of people in the diner at the same time. And then, this, of course, servers will wear masks and all of that. So that's our hope, that we can get people back in the door and keep them apart enough to feel good about and safe in coming in.
That's great. I want to talk now a little bit about nutrition and meal planning. How do Meals on Wheels people do that? How do you must have chefs on staff?
We do, and we have we also have dietitians who make sure. So for our Older Americans Act funding, we have to meet regulations and provide a certain nutrient requirements for every meal we serve to the older folks. So we have a dietitian who helps create the meals along with our cooks and our chefs and our, you know, even we've taken recipes from our clients and our volunteers. So we create a 7-week cycle menu normally, and we're always looking to modernize it. We never had quinoa on the menu before. Now we do, or kale, things like that. So we're really modernizing it, creating more variety, more ethnic foods, which we really want to make sure we're meeting as many people's kind of needs as possible. Of course, with food, that's almost impossible.
Especially with kale. Kale.
Yeah, exactly. I'm in your camp there. So we have some of the traditional, you know, meatloaf and mashed potatoes that, of course, the older set love, the older set. And then we've got the more kind of younger older people that have eaten a lot of different things. It's much more varied. And like I say, kale and quinoa, what else can you have on there? But the dietitians work with the cooks and everybody to make sure not only are we meeting the nutrition requirements, because it's low salt, low fat, right, all those things, how do you make a meal taste good when you've got those kind of regulations? In the diner, we don't worry about it too much. We don't worry about it at all for the general public. We want to make sure it's a good, healthy meal, but a really good meal. And for the participants in the program, it's a constant kind of battle to say, how can we use different spices to make up for the salt we can't put in there? Or how do we change up the sauce to make sure it provides the moisture we need when you got to have so much starch and, you know, all of those kind of things? So it's a constant, effort, let's put it that way.
Very thoughtful meal planning, it sounds like. That's awesome.
Yeah, no, it has to be. It has to be to, yeah. I mean, it would be easy just to make meals that met regulations, but nobody would eat them.
Right.
So because we love our butter and we love our salt and, you know, all of those kind of things. So we're always working on how can we provide that the best meal, best tasting meal possible that gives you the nutrients, but also makes you really want to eat all of it.
Yeah. Well, in the last minute or so we have here, Suzanne, tell me, I know because you're a nonprofit, you need help. So how can people help out?
Well, I think it's the two things. The first one is we always need money, so donate, and you can go to MOWP.org to donate. We are right now providing much more food than we were, and the costs have obviously gone up, so we need money for that. And, of course, we still need volunteers, like we chatted earlier. We need people who are willing to get on the phone and friendly chat, and people who are willing to load boxes. Or right now, with the food boxes, we need drivers to take them to specific places. So there's always something to do, and MOWP.org is the place to do it.
Awesome. Well, you've given us great information today. Keep doing the good stuff.
Well, thank you very much. We really appreciate you having us on and spreading the word.
We've been talking today with Suzanne Washington, CEO of Meals on Wheels, people. Thanks again.
Let's Talk Portland is an Entercom Radio Portland public affairs program.